The feeling was surreal, I would say, because at that time I know that this may be the last time that I could step on the soil of Hong Kong.
Some Hong Kong residents make a big move. It's Tuesday, March 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, South Korea considers universal income. Bali boosts compost. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Britain is preparing for tens of thousands of Hong Kong citizens to apply for special visas to settle in the UK after the government launched a new scheme that offers fast-track citizenship to residents of the former British colony in response to China's crackdown on basic freedoms. Beijing has strongly criticized the move. VOA's Henry Ridgewell spoke to one pro-democracy activist in London who was forced to flee Hong Kong and is now applying to settle in Britain.
Finn Lau is building a new life in Britain, but he's still fighting for Hong Kong's freedom. As a student in 2014, he was a key player in the so-called umbrella pro-democracy protests. A new job took him to Britain in 2019, just before protests broke out again in Hong Kong against China's extradition bill. Lau watched as the protests grew into a wider pro-democracy movement.
I did go back to Hong Kong in late December 2019 because I want to participate, I want to witness the street, the protests in Hong Kong. But then I was unfortunate to be arrested along with a few hundred others on the first day of 2020.
Lau was lucky. The police failed to identify him as a protest ringleader and he was released.
So I just immediately fly back to the UK 1 or 2 days later after the arrest. And on the plane, the feeling was surreal, I would say. Because at that time I know that this may be the last time that I could step on the soil of Hong Kong.
A few months after arriving safely back in Britain, Lau was attacked on the street.
Back in April 2020, there was a rumour that there has been a £10,000 bounty on my life, on my head. And then 2 months later, when I was walking in a normally safe neighbourhood, I was suddenly ambushed or attacked by unknown street gangs. They didn't take away any of my personal belongings. They didn't say a word.
British police failed to identify his assailants. In June, Beijing imposed a national security law on Hong Kong. Britain says the crackdown breaches the handover agreement signed in 1997, which China denies. In response, Britain recently launched a new visa scheme for Hong Kong residents holding British Nationals Overseas or BNO passports, which were offered before Britain's handover of the territory. The visas offer the ability to work and study and fast-tracked British citizenship. Lau has just submitted his application.
Some people may think that BNO scheme is not a direct tool that could leverage against the CCP. Because the CCP won't be hurt by the BNO scheme. But on the other hand, some people may think that this offers a kind of lifeboat to Hong Kongers.
While grateful, Lau and other Hong Kong exiles want Britain to do more.
We just think that maybe some more actions could be carried out by the UK government. For example, maybe some sort of Magnitsky-style sanction, which could free, under which the assets of some Hong Kong government officials like Carrie Lam could be freezed by the UK government.
Britain says it is considering such sanctions. Meanwhile, Lau and other exiles continue fighting for Hong Kong's freedom, helped by the lifeline offered by a British BNO visa. But even on the streets of London, Lau says he does not feel safe from the long arm of China's Communist Party. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
In Myanmar, authorities have extended martial law in more areas of the main city of Yangon Monday amid reports of more killings of protesters at the hands of security forces. State-run MRTV News Channel announced four districts are under martial law a day after security forces killed at least 40 people across Myanmar. It was the bloodiest day of demonstrations against the junta that seized power in a February 1st coup. Authorities imposed martial law after several Chinese-owned factories were set on fire, and about 2,000 people had apparently stopped fire engines from reaching them. China is seen as supportive of the Myanmar junta. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman said the burning and looting of Chinese companies is abhorrent. We invite you to read more by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, also on Facebook, and at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Myanmar junta extends martial law in Yangon after dozens of anti-coup protesters killed. Top U.S. officials in Asia on first overseas visit. Bangladesh says investigation opened after accusations of torture against cartoonist. Massive sandstorm shrouds China's capital. Australia plans to restart international travel using a COVID-19 bubble with Singapore. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We continue with VOA Asia. The idea of universal basic income, where every citizen receives a regular amount of money from the government, has long been considered a fringe or radical idea in South Korea. The coronavirus pandemic may be changing that, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
Lee Gon-hyung epitomizes a major problem with South Korea's economy. There just aren't enough jobs for young people. Nearly 30% of youth like Lee are unemployed or underemployed.
There was only part-time work in this job market, and my job just didn't provide enough income, and at a certain age, no one wants to ask your parents for help.
Lee didn't have to. He was one of tens of thousands of Koreans to get regular checks from the government simply because he was 24 years old. It's part of a bold economic project in this province just outside Seoul, which is increasingly handing out cash to its citizens. In addition to checks for 24-year-olds, the province is also giving out cash pandemic relief to everyone. The money must be spent at local businesses like this market, or will expire, a policy many business owners like.
The relief funds have been a huge help to our market. We have people coming here who ordinarily never shop at a local market.
The project is spearheaded by Governor Lee Jae-myung. He believes eventually all Koreans should receive Universal Basic Income, or UBI.
It'll help consumption, lead to more demand, more employment, and more investment. And anyway, it's a future we can't avoid due to the fourth industrial revolution.
South Korea, one of the world's most technologically advanced societies, is at the forefront of that revolution. Cell phones and other technology long ago reshaped or even eliminated many human interactions. The pandemic has sped up that trend, creating a contact-free or untacked environment, as it's called in Korea.
Until now, UBI was just a theory in the textbooks. But with the pandemic, we've seen the digital, untacked environment it created and how labor isn't needed as much to produce things. I think the idea is gaining momentum.
So much momentum that Lee is a front-runner to become president next year, though he has lots of critics.
What proponents of basic income overlook is that individuals need money and public services, and the state must provide those services. But they'll collapse if UBI is adopted.
The critics say UBI amounts to cheap populism, meant to win votes. They prefer more targeted welfare programs to help those in need. But direct cash payments are becoming a global trend. In the U.S., multiple stimulus checks have gone directly to bank accounts.
There was already generally a direction toward accepting UBI in some form or another, but COVID perhaps accelerated it.
Whether that trend outlasts the pandemic is much less clear. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin are meeting with allies in Japan and South Korea this week to reaffirm the Trans-Pacific partnerships in the face of an increasingly assertive China and silent North Korea. Washington's top diplomatic and defense officials began their tour of the region with a stop in Tokyo, marking their first overseas travel as representatives of the Biden administration. Blinken and Austin are holding what's known as a 2+2, a meeting between foreign and defense chiefs with their Japanese counterparts today before they depart for Seoul on Wednesday. Happening now in Asia, China's worst sandstorm in a decade hit Beijing and northern parts of the country. Hundreds of flights were canceled because of low visibility and high winds. Authorities advise residents to stay indoors as air quality index report a hazardous rating. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thank you for listening. A small village in Indonesia is sending less and less of their household waste to landfills. VOA's Rendy Wikesana reports on how they're making environmental waves.
Since 2012, the village of Padang Tegal in Bali, Indonesia, has instructed its residents to sort out their garbage before disposal. Wati does this every day.
Ini tempat sampah yang non organik. Kalau yang ini yang organik. Waktu saya lahir kan masih
banyak pohonan. When I was little, trees were everywhere. Kalau sampah itu used to burn our garbage, but no longer. Now we live in modern era. We are advised to sort out our garbage based on organic and non-organic category.
Non-organic.
Padang Tegal Village is situated at the heart of the popular tourist destination of Ubud. With only 607 families living there, the village may be small, but it produces a great amount of waste. So, local authorities built this 4,000 square meter compost house owned by the village.
The compost center only manages waste in Padang Tegal Village. Only families with their waste sorted out into organic and non-organic groups get collected. Then we process the organic waste into compost.
It's not the law everywhere, and it is a bit of a chore. Villagers not only spend time and energy sorting out their waste, but they also pay a $6 fee each month for garbage collection. So why do they participate? Well, simply because the village chief tells them to.
My name is Ima Degandra, the chief of Padang Tegal Village. In Bali, Bendesa, or the village chief, is the highest rank leader in the village, elected democratically by its people. Whatever decided by the chief is a decision that the people must comply to. This is the eminence of our custom.
Balinese generally reside in traditional villages, which have their very own regulations, known locally as pararam and awigawe. Whatever the village chief says is the law of the land. If they don't sort the waste out, their garbage won't be picked up. Local officials say that well over half of all the garbage the island produces is organic, so most of it can be composted. Practically, that means that every day this village transforms organic waste into 1 cubic meter of compost. The compost is then sold to local farmers and businesses. From Bali, Indonesia, Randy Wicaksana, VOA News.
That's all the time we have for today's program. We hope you join us again tomorrow at the same time for VOA Asia. In the meantime, follow us online. We're on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Look us up under our name, VOA Asia. We also thank those who help bring the program to you every day, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.